Welcome to this episode of Religion and American Life, a podcast of the Blasey Center for Religion and American Public Life at Boston College. I am Mark Massa, and I have the happy duty of being the director of the Blasey Center and today's podcast host. This podcast is an initiative of the Blasey Center's commitment to connecting a community of scholars, policymakers, media, and religious leaders in conversations and scholarly reflection around issues at the intersection of religion and American public life. Today, we are honored to have with us M. Kathleen Caveney to discuss the theological and sociological themes of the Barbie movie, which was such a big summer hit. Kathy Caveney, first of all, is a very good friend of mine. Kathy is a scholar who focuses on the relationship of law, religion, and morality. She serves as the Darold and Juliet Libby Professor at Boston College, a position that includes appointments in both the Department of Theology and the BC Law School. She was the 2018-19 Carey and Anne McGuire Chair in Ethics and American History at the Klug Center at the Library of Congress. Kathy has published 4 books and over 100 articles and essays in journals and books, specializing in law, ethics, and even medical ethics. She serves on the masthead of Commonweal magazine as a regular columnist, and her books include Law's Virtue, Following Autonomy and Solidarity in American Society, A Culture of Engagement, Law, Religion, and Morality, Prophecy Without Contempt, Religious Discourse in the Public Square, and Ethics at the Edges of the Law, Christian Moralists and American Legal Thought. Welcome, Kathy.
I'm delighted to be here.
I want to start, Kathy, by just asking you, you and I both saw the Barbie movie this summer. Did it surprise you that you found it to be a serious kind of film and not just a summer throwaway movie?
Yes, I was surprised. I mean, I went to see it, frankly, as a summer blockbuster, as the first time, in fact, that I'd been in the movie theater since before COVID. So I was just expecting a little bit of light entertainment and a lot of pink, as they say, for the movie. But what I found was that although it was very funny and very entertaining, there were deeper themes that resonated with me as a theologian and as an ethicist trying to look at questions that are important to American culture.
And so how long after the movie did you decide, I have to write about this?
For me, as a writer of that kind of thing, what I find myself doing is thinking about, you know, Barbie and the role of women, Barbie and stereotypes, Barbie and the loss of paradise. And I think I better write something, otherwise I won't be able to stop thinking about it. So writing becomes a way of saying my piece and moving on in an odd sort of way.
So let me ask you this, because you and I have had many conversations about this since that movie came out. How do you consider this movie, a movie in which features pink in an alarmingly frontal kind of way, how is this movie theology? Isn't theology focused on God and mystery? How does pink enter into theology?
Well, I started my column or my essay for National Catholic Reporter by saying actually pink does or have a role to play in the Catholic liturgical tradition in Gaudete Sunday, for example. Although they call it rose, it's actually pink. It's just a nice way of saying pink, a fancy way of saying pink. I think the broader point is, you know, isn't theology supposed to be abstruse and focus on angels dancing on the head of a pin or what the relationship of the three persons of the Trinity are and very big words, very dusty books and people in tweed jackets are the only ones that need to apply. And I don't believe that's the case. I think theology is thinking about God, but the people that God created and whom God loves and how they relate to one another and their place in the world. And this movie is raising some very profound questions about those sorts of issues.
I think you're right on that. What kind of theological issues do you think the movie raises, or at least raised for you?
Well, I think the most fundamental question it raises, well, two. One is, what does it mean to live a good life, right? So is a good life a life of plastic pink perfection where every day you get up, your shower is exactly the right way, your food is exactly right, your hair doesn't fall, your dress falls perfectly? Is that a good life, a life of safety, a life of perfection? Or is a good life a life that involves choice and involves risk and involves the possibility and ultimately, in some sense, the certainty of loss? And the reason the movie raised that question is because Barbie, in the end, is forced to make a choice between staying in Barbie land, which is this land of pink perfection, now retooled and reinvigorated for the next century by the recapture of the Barbies of the machinery of government. And she says, no, I don't want to stay there. I don't want to be safe only. I want the possibility of being a creator as well as a creature. So I am going to leave Barbie land and I'm going to take my chances in the real world where there's sorrow, where there's aging, where there are fallen foot arches, and you really almost have to wear Birkenstocks to be comfortable rather than stiletto heels. Manolo Blahniks are comfortable in Barbie land. They're not comfortable in the real world.
So the talk you gave here at BC in your essay in the NCR was called Barbie and the Loss of Paradise. But as you're using that phrase, the loss of paradise was a good thing.
Well, I think in the Christian tradition, it's at least an ambivalent thing, right? I mean, paradise has its moment. And Eden, which was the original paradise, looked great from some perspective. But humanity gained certain things through the grace of God, but it was a gain by leaving paradise. The tree of knowledge, the knowledge of good and evil, the capacity to function not just as children of God, but also as in some sense co-creators with God, co-stewards with God. All of that was possible because we left paradise. And great theologians like Augustine and Aquinas have talked about how in some sense the fall was a happy fall, not an unmitigated disaster.
Implicit, both in your very smart article in NCR and also in your talk here at BC, was sort of a little rejoinder to theologians to engage a tad more with sort of popular culture, public culture, which I think theologians, as you say, tend to wear tweed jackets and smoke pipes and read dusty books. Were you offering something of a critique of how theology is done?
I would say a little bit of a prod, maybe not a total critique. I'm pluralistic about theology, and I'm happy that there are some people that are contented to stay within a narrow or highly specialized realm. But what I would say to people who are tempted to venture out is that theology isn't meant only to be an intramural discussion. It's meant to have relevance for the lives that we lead, and it's perfectly capable of dialoguing with some of the smarter secular things. And I think that Greta Gerwig and the Barbie movie and, you know, much else in terms of contemporary culture is very smart and is making good points. And that's one of the tasks of at least a certain branch of theologians, is to try to see how this perspective can be respectfully and sometimes critically engaged in light of the presuppositions and the riches of the faith tradition.
You mentioned a number of moments in the movie itself when you said, I think you described them as theological moments. What moments during the watching of the film itself did you come to some sort of decision that this is about theology, and that action or that sequence in the movie had pretty profound theological repercussions? The famous scene where suddenly her feet drop, you know, the feet no longer fit the high heels that Barbie was made. So Barbie becomes human. Is there anything else in the movie that you really like?
Well, what I liked about that is in the broader Western tradition, you know, it's often purely male experience that counts as a sense that things aren't quite right, aren't what they should be. And the movie is taking an experience of a doll, and, you know, certainly a stereotypical doll, and saying, hey, this isn't right. My feet don't fit my shoes anymore. I can't walk. So I thought that that was interesting, asking what it would mean if we read women's experience into the tradition in some way. So that was an interesting point. Then the second point that I thought was most a beautiful point was when Barbie is sitting at the bus stop after having gone to the real world and trying to figure out what went wrong with Barbie Land, and she's come to the real world to put all things aright. And she encounters an older woman at the bus stop with her. And she says to the older woman, she looks at her kind of mesmerized and says, "You are so beautiful." And the older woman looks at her back almost impatiently and says, "I know." And then they two have a laugh. And so that what there is a sense that beauty is a much deeper and richer and more complicated category. But in the Western tradition, we would call it transcendental rather than an airbrushed magazine cover. And so the stereotype of the airbrushed magazine cover, Barbie, recognizes real beauty in the face of the elderly woman. So I thought, well, this is extremely rich and deep. This is more than just a popcorn movie.
There was a lot of discussion when the movie came out and immediately afterwards about the stereotyping in the movie with Weird Barbie and Alan and things like that. Did the movie strike you as providing or pushing stereotypical social roles, cultural roles?
I think it's complicated. I think it was acknowledging stereotypes, playing with stereotypes, and also in some sense subverting stereotypes, right? So, you know, Alan, played by Michael Cera, who is just a fabulous, funny, and kind of awkward actor. There are many Kens, but only one Alan. But what you have about him is that he's the one who's unique. He's the one who's himself, and he doesn't feel like he has to replicate everybody else in order to have his humanity. So in an odd sort of way, Alan has what stereotypical Barbie is trying to find in the real world, which is her own identity. And so does Weird Barbie, played by Kate McKinnon, who's also just a terrific actress. She doesn't look like everybody. She's been damaged by the way she was played in the real world, but she's the one who has the wisdom and, you know, kind of a preternatural flexibility. I mean, you know, she's got the physical comedy down. So I think it's playing with stereotypes as well as, in some sense, enforcing them.
For me, a big feature was, and you mentioned this already, that it's a movie about perfection and paradise from a female as opposed to a male point of view. The tape that was playing in my head was, I wonder how men see this movie. I mean, in other words, Ken's identity in the movie is only through Barbie. It's the opposite social role that usually is the social role in our culture, where women derive their identity from the man. But it's just the opposite in the movie, that Ken's identity is completely dependent on how much attention Barbie will give him.
Right.
And indeed, he becomes increasingly aware of that and increasingly upset about that. Talk about that a little bit. I think that's a very important theme.
I think so, too. In some ways, Ryan Gosling was the most complicated figure in the movie, right? So, I mean, maybe men win in the end, even in a feminist movie about Barbie. Some people say there is, you know, no sex in the movie. And it's true. Barbies don't have sex organs. And, you know, there's no clear sexual desire per se in the movie. But Ken's longing for Barbie, to be with Barbie, to be alone with Barbie, and to do something with Barbie is sort of palpable in the movie. You know, he wants to stay over with her and she can't because it's girls' night, because every night is girls' night and she's not interested in that at all, but he knows he wants a connection. So in a sense, Ken is the one who has this sense of love and longing that we would normally associate with a little bit more mature, you know, a development of a human being. On the other hand, Ken is not necessarily all that mature. He gets into the real world, finds the patriarchy, and thinks it looks very, very good to him, and, you know, tries to bring it back to Barbie land and almost succeeds in doing that. In the end, what's interesting is, you know, it looks like he decides to stay in Barbie land. It's not clear, but it looks like that's the decision he's making rather than going back to the patriarchy. I mean, Ken could have said, Barbie, well, I'm going to go back there. Things look really good for me there. I think I'll do that. But there's something in him that seems called to kind of an authentic configuration of himself in Barbie land, and possibly even, you know, reforming the laws to make men equal there. So his social justice activity is going to be making room for men in Barbie land rather than oppressing women in the real world. So I thought Ken came off quite well in this.
Is that the way you would describe the fact that Ken is quote unquote saved in the movie?
Is he saved? I don't like using that word per se. I think he's on the path to redemption. Who knows what next decision he'll make? Because Ken being Ken, there could be something going catastrophically wrong. And, you know, just putting on my commercial hat for a moment, given the success of Barbie, I can't believe there isn't a sequel and it doesn't involve Ken doing something catastrophically problematic in the movie.
You mentioned during both in a review of the movie and during our conversation at BC, you said that you felt the movie embodied important theological virtues like compassion and love in very clear and even dramatic ways. Could you talk about that just a little bit?
Well, I think what it involved too is sort of the overcoming of a certain kind of resentment and anger in order to help somebody who's vulnerable. So the key human characters are a woman named Gloria, who, you know, who had a tough life. She has a daughter who's sort of a teenage mean girl in some sense, doesn't respect her mother, who mocks her mother for playing with dolls and can't stand her collaboration with the patriarchy. You know, the kind of normal 13-year-old girl, a sense of injustice, untempered by compassion, especially for your mother. So that was the relationship. But together, you know, both of those women, the 13-year-old girl, really, and then the woman, get together to try to save Barbie from the clutches of Mattel, the corporation, who want to put her back in the box and stop these pesky dolls from invading the real world.
As you know, and as you've written about, the corporate side of America is portrayed with several long sequences, especially the Mattel Corporation. Is there a critique of corporate America in the movie? And if so, how is it a critique given the fact that Will Ferrell, who of course is a very funny comedian, plays the CEO of Mattel?
I think it's a very light critique, honestly. I mean, I think we have to recognize that corporations are funding this, supporting this, and they'll take a critique, but it's not going to be a deep one. Just like when you go for a job interview and somebody says, well, what is your flaw, Father Massa, as a candidate for this job? And you might say, well, my flaw is I work too hard and I care too deeply. So Mattel is sort of saying, yeah, we're bad. We're the bad guy, but it's a Halloween bad guy. We're kind of putting on a villain's hat and we've got Will Ferrell playing us. So how bad can we be? He was Mombatu in Zoolander. He's a cartoon villain.
Right. No, exactly. Yeah. There is some gender stereotyping in the movie. We talked about that already. So there's competition among the Kens, but not among the Barbies. And that seems to reflect, in fact, the real world, the American culture, where men are allowed to be competitive and women are not allowed to be competitive.
Right. I think that the movie portrayed, well, I mean, it's hard to say. I don't think it did a good enough job for this. You might say that in an ideal world, just like, you know, for men and for women, we would all be acting cooperatively and not competitively. So to have that kind of a situation in Barbie land or Eden is one thing. And I think there were more signs of strife and competitiveness, even among women, or at least the potential of it in the real world. I mean, I think the scene in the high school where Barbie goes and talks to these high school girls and is reduced to tears by these 13-year-olds is a sign that in reality, women are not always, you know, wonderfully supportive of one another.
How do you think faith communities could use this movie in terms of sort of addressing long-term and important theological issues.
This would be a good intergenerational event to talk about. What is stereotyping? What does it mean to be just like somebody else? What's the point of individuality? Is it just to have your unique Instagram feed with your own personal flowers, or is it to have something else? What does it mean to live a good life? What kind of risks should you take? I think all of those are questions that are raised in very vivid form in the movie, and you can use those to jump to the Catholic or the Christian or, you know, out of a different faith tradition's answers to those.
I was actually surprised that there were more people in the audience for the live event who were, let's say, over 21 than under 21. And you seem to be less surprised by that. Is it because Barbie itself is a now a doll that you're not sure how many girls play with when they're young? Or is it because it was dealing with issues that are more than just a summer of throwaway movie?
I don't think it's because it was dealing with that sort of issues. I think what's really interesting is that in order to get a movie made, you know, in Hollywood, you have to have a certain standing and a certain age that comes with the standing. So, you know, the movies about the Brady Bunch were made when the generation watched the Brady Bunch got into a position to greenlight movies in Hollywood. The movie about Barbie, Greta Gerwig is in her, I think, in her mid-30s, somewhere in that general area. So, you know, this is something that's attractive to that generation. But that doesn't mean that the younger generation or an older generation can't be brought along to see what the questions are. And it is more interesting probably to some people than reading a dry theology book.
Now, you're a quite distinguished theologian. So this all came to you, you know, within a short time of seeing the movie itself. How do you think the general audience understood that perhaps our podcast can be used as a gentle nudge toward that?
I think that themes can resonate with people without them fully understanding why it resonates. So I wouldn't expect everybody went to see the movie, even if they were religious, to be able to do what we lawyers call issue spotting. Oh, that's a question of the fall. This is a question of free will. This is a question of flourishing. This is a question of the relationship of men and women. They can sense the depth and the complexity in this and realize it's not just a cartoon, that there's something real here. And I think that that goes along with the choice of the director to make the movie. This was a really hard movie to get right. Right. And there's a lot of women that were really ambivalent about the movie. I talked to a lot of them because they were saying, I don't know if I want to go see Barbie. Barbie was always this, you know, unrealistic stereotype of perfection, the don't hate me because I'm beautiful doll, that kind of thing. Why do I want to go make myself miserable and see that? Well, I think that what was really good about the director and the casting choice is even though Margot Robbie was very beautiful, is very beautiful, you don't hate her. She seems like a very likable sort of person, somebody that would be friends with you and wouldn't be a mean girl. And there was a warmth to the character that I think was essential to the movie succeeding. Do you see more of a role for Boisy maybe on a more regular basis engaging film as a way of interpreting religion and public life, given the role of this in the popular imagination?
I wouldn't have thought that prior to meeting you or seeing this movie, but now I come to see that perhaps that would round out the kind of questions we pursue here. Our duty is to look at those moments in the culture when religion intersects with politics, economics, social justice issues, gender questions, things like that. And I think that the Barbie movie, in fact, does that in a fun and deeply interesting way, actually. So I think, yes, the Boisy Center will most probably engage popular culture more regularly, precisely to tease out these things in a way that's accessible, and also to talk about places where those questions are addressed that haven't really been looked at by theologians or academics who tend to dismiss that area of reality, popular culture. Thank you for tuning into this. We look forward to engaging you in the near future with another podcast.
Thank you for listening to Religion and American Life. a podcast by the Boasi Center for Religion and American Public Life at Boston College. For more information on the work of the Boasi Center, the center's schedule of events, or to listen to other episodes of this podcast, please visit our website at bc.edu/boisi.